Big Blue Door is a theater group devoted to true stories, long-form improv, and comedy writing. From 2012 to 2015, Big Blue Door produced a live, monthly show called The Big Blue Door Jam, where people shared 6 to 8 minute true stories inspired by monthly themes. This story was told by Graylin Brashear in December of 2013. The night's theme was The Kids Are All Right.
So their names were Ashlyn and Connell, except those weren't actually their names. Their names were really similar to that. They were the kind of names that really rich white North Jersey people give their kids when they're 1/16th Irish. And I met them when they were 7, and I was 22. I was their summer camp counselor at this day camp for little kids at the Long Beach Island Foundation of the Arts and Sciences in New Jersey. It's a really long, pretentious sounding name for what was a country club for people in this super rich vacation town on the Jersey Shore. People who wanted their country club and their social scene to have like an artsy educational flair and come with tax deductions. And it's a super rich place, a really tony part of the Jersey Shore. It's geographically not very far from the Jersey Shore that you all know from MTV, but culturally, like, massive gulf, very different. The average value of the homes in this town was $8 million. It was not unusual to have the nanny drop the kids off at camp in a Lotus, and John Stewart actually vacationed there every summer but could not afford to buy. And these kids were what we uncharitably called dumpers. They were the families whose parents actually owned a second home there, and the dad was usually a Wall Street dad, and the mom just stayed at the beach all summer with the kids. And the mom would sort of just like shove the kids into camp all summer long, because how else are you gonna do your beach yoga in peace? And dad would come down on the weekends. And these kids were a little bit unusual in that dad wasn't in the picture at all. But we had them, I had them in my nature studies class all summer. They were twins. And they were terrors. They were behaviorally pretty bad. They would just not pay attention to you. They were above the rules. If you told them not to do something, they would do something. Like, you know, avoid that thigh deep section of the salt marsh where you are going to sink and I'm going to have to pull you out by your shoulders and you're inevitably going to lose a shoe. They would just be like, ah. And they also had this bizarre emotional breadth and depth that was just really weird and unsettling. They would get really bent out of shape about stuff and go very dark and very angry. And Ashlyn once just sat down in the middle of the street when we were trying to cross like what was really a busy highway up this this vacation island and just refused to move. Her brother once had this really emotional reaction to a fish. We spent a lot of the summer seine netting in the bay, and we would bring back fish to put in a saltwater tank. He caught this trumpet fish once, which is a really unusual looking fish that looks like an unrolled seahorse. And he was so psyched about this fish. And I kept them all in a saltwater tank that also had invertebrates in it. And as inevitably happens when you put like basically bait fish and crabs together, you get to witness some death. And we came in one morning and the fish was dead, my bad. And he just totally lost it. And he wasn't crying, but he just got seriously depressed for the entire day, and eventually got more and more agitated and was determined to hold a funeral for the fish. And so I'm like trying to wrangle a whole bunch of 5 to 8 year olds, making sure they don't drown, and watching him as he like scrapes a grave for this fish in the sand and lays it down, covers it up, lays shells over it, and is like kneeling. And his sister eventually like laid her hand on his back and was like, okay, it's time to go. And they were like that with each other, and I got to see that a little bit more when I started to babysit for them. They had sort of started to cling to me, and their mom noticed this, and I spent probably more time with them than anybody else that summer besides their mom. And so she asked me if I would babysit for them every once in a while in the evening, so I did. And I started to realize that it wasn't just them that was weird. They were very different in their house. They were not acting out. They would just very quietly play with their toys, clean up after themselves. And their house was impeccable, like insanely orderly. Their mom always had a big grin on her face, but you could tell by her house that like something was a little weird with these people. Every mug on the open shelves in the kitchen, you know, the handle was like lined up at the same angle. I once grazed my finger and I went into the bathroom to find a Band-Aid, and I opened up the sink below the bathroom, the cabinet below the bathroom sink, and like picture the cabinet below your bathroom sink. It is a mess. This was not like that. Every product, there were four of every single thing, and they were identical, and they were lined up like this. Like four identical bottles of sunscreen, four identical tubes of the same brand of toothpaste unopened, four identical boxes of Band-Aids also unopened. And I like, in a weird move, like leaned over my shoulder and was like, can I open this box of Band-Aids to the kids as I'm bleeding? And they were like, I think so. So it was just a bizarre window onto this family and these kids, and I just could not figure out these twins. They also had that bond that I just sort of chalked up to twinness. They could finish each other's thoughts. They sort of had conversations like they were talking to themselves, except they were talking to another self. And I found that I spent a lot of time thinking about them and just wondering about them and kind of just wondering what the hell was up with these bizarre children. Also, ethereally beautiful, like blonde hair, eyes that were too giant for their faces. So they had this magnetism about them. I won't call it manipulative, but it was almost like that. They were like bewitching children. So one day, the revelation came, and we were walking back from the beach across Barnegat Light State Park, massive expanse of sand, like a 3/4 mile slog through hot, loose sand, and I'm carrying a net and like herding them along because they're dragging, and most of the kids had run ahead. And we got to a point in the sand, it's like white sand, lots of big black rocks that have fallen off a nearby jetty, and some douchebag kids earlier in the day, I assume, had arranged the rocks to make a giant swastika 10 feet wide. And, you know, as a descendant of Eastern European Jews, I was like really upset by this. It was hot, I was like burned out from the day, and I just threw down the stuff I was carrying, and I walked over, and I like violently kicked the rocks aside. And I turned around and walked back, and Ashlyn and Connor and a couple other kids were just staring at me like this. And they're like, what did you do? And I was like, what? Well, there was some people had used the rocks to write something not nice in the sand. And they were like, what did they say? Because they're seven and they're gonna ask. And I was like, it was a symbol and it meant something bad. And you know, 5 seconds later, I had gone down a rabbit hole of trying to explain Nazism and genocide to a couple of seven-year-olds. And I was like, I wish I could go back and take this part of the conversation back. They're gonna go home to their parents and be like, you know, talking about Nazism, and their mom's gonna call me up and be like, why were you talking to my seven-year-old about genocide? So I was trying to explain this, and Connell just walks over to me and slips his hand in mine, and he looks up at me and he goes, I think I know what you mean. When I was a baby, some bad people flew a plane into my dad's work, and the whole building burned down and he died. And all of a sudden, everything made total sense to me about these kids. You have to understand that in New Jersey, 9/11 wiped out a lot of people and a lot of communities who were the identifying people in those towns, the white-collar dads who took the ferry or the train into Manhattan every day, and dozens of them died at once. And these kids were too young to ever remember their father. And this thing that was this defining characteristic of a generation of people was like the great personal tragedy in their lives. And all of a sudden, their clinginess, their weirdness, their emotional intimacy with each other, their mom's obsessive tendencies totally made sense. And I was just stunned. And I actually went home and looked up their dad's obituary in the New York Times Portraits of Grief, which was this incredible series of thumbnail obits of all the people who died in the Trade Center. And it was all about the twins, like all about his interaction with these babies who were born prematurely and him and his wife's relationship with them. And I have never stopped thinking about them. And I really hope that they're all right.
For more true stories, visit teej.fm. That's teej.fm. For classes in storytelling and upcoming stories shows, visit bigbluedoor.org.